Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. We're starting the show today by talking about a program in the Fox Valley that's helping LGBTQ students and youth. With us today from the organization called Diverse and Resilient are Reiko Ramos. Reiko, welcome to the show.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having us.
Great to have you with us. Reiko's the youth advocate for the organization. Kathy Flores is the director of their anti-violence program. And Kathy, welcome to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having us. We're excited to be here.
Well, glad to have you here. We'll talk with Reiko and Kathy about the services that are offered, the effect that they've had on the people they serve, and certainly like to have you part of the conversation. So what questions do you have about programs for the LGBTQ community? Have these kinds of programs maybe helped you or family members? What questions do you have about creating safe places for youth? Join in. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. Kathy, let's start with you. What's the mission of Diverse and Resilient?
Yeah, so, well, we live by our mission, but the mission of Diverse and Resilient is also part of our vision work. And who we are is that we are an LGBTQ org, and we work to achieve health equity and improve the safety and well-being of LGBTQ people and communities in Wisconsin. But our mission really doesn't tell all of who we are because of the fact that we also work with Black and Indigenous and other people of color and working on issues of racism in communities as well.
How did you get started?
You know, in the 90s, it was started as an organization that was really looking to help with cultural competency of healthcare organizations because Gary Hollander, the founder, recognized that doctors and physicians and other people weren't really maybe as educated as they needed to be on LGBTQ health disparities. And so we started out in that capacity, really helping other agencies understand. And then we became an agency that started doing HIV testing and care in Milwaukee. And we have an anti-violence program now, too, that does direct service care as well. And we have a thriving youth program both in Milwaukee and in Appleton.
Oh, that sounds great. Reiko, tell us about the Room to Be Youth program.
So our Room to Be Youth program, we newly announced this name. So though it's kind of hard for those of you listening on radio, but it's Room to Be Youth, Y-O-U, parentheses, T-H. So emphasis on both young people and the U in youth. And the idea is that this Room to Be Youth program is part of our anti-violence work in Northeast Wisconsin. And it is a program where LGBTQ young folks can be connected with us for support and an emphasis on the anti-violence work in that. So many of the young people that we serve may be experiencing teen dating violence or other forms of violence in other types of relationships in their life. And we really include things like family rejection and bullying as part of that violence.
Oh, boy. Well, you just secured new funding for the program. Where'd that funding come from?
That funding is from the Department of Children and Families. This is a children and youth grant that has secured funding for this program. And we also have some other community partners that have also helped us really get our youth programming going, and I'll maybe let Kathy talk a little bit more about that.
Sure. Well,
yeah. Go ahead,
yeah,
Kathy.
I will just say that we are so grateful because right away, the Community Foundation of the Fox Cities and United Way through their COVID-19 fund recognized this emergent need of mental health around LGBTQ youth programming. And they gave us our first $10,000 immediately. Northwestern Mutual followed up. And I'll say WPR is also a sponsor of our program. And we're grateful Chris Deering has helped us with advertising to get people to our program. So you're a partner of ours, too. So we thank you for that.
Oh, well, I tell you what, it's we're proud to be partners in the program, and thank you for what you're doing. I the funding has to mean everything for the program.
It means so much. And I will say, too, in addition to that, we've had a number of community members who reach out and want to give specifically to this program. So I wish I could name them all, but there are just so many community members who have sent checks, who have dropped off cash, have done fundraisers. And, you know, that really goes to help our programming. Right now it's virtual, but, you know, we also help young adults who may be homeless and experiencing violence get into shelters. And sometimes that means we've had to put them in hotels, help them get back on their feet and things like that. So all of our funding goes directly to either our staff services or directly to survivors.
Yeah. And I imagine you mentioned COVID. COVID's had to have a big impact on all of us. And I expect it's had an equally large or maybe larger effect on LGBTQ youth.
Yeah, I would say, and I'll let Reiko talk more about that. But before this program even was at Diverse and Resilient in March when we shut down, we had to shut down like everybody else. And we kept our warm line open and we noticed in a 6-week period, we got 300 calls. And in the 6 months before, we had a total of 300 calls. And we were hearing from youth who were now experiencing family violence and unacceptance and having to be locked in their homes with people who weren't accepting them. And then also just the extreme violence that was happening around folks who being stuck in a home with an abuser, perhaps. And so, yes, that did increase. And Reiko has been working with those youth now who are a part of our program since June.
Yeah, Reiko, do you want to talk a bit more about that?
Yeah, and I would say that the impact of COVID has really shown us how a lot of the systems that we rely on for support have always been a little bit broken, more than a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. And they weren't created with or for LGBTQ folks. And that's a part of ourselves that we take everywhere. So we're LGBTQ people in our schools, in our families, in our communities. And so the impact of COVID affects all of those aspects of young people's lives. And I would say one of the biggest differences that I've seen in working with LGBTQ youth is that prior to COVID, I was able to work with youth in like a brick and mortar, already established safe space for LGBTQ young folks. And they could bring, at least in the times that I was interacting with them, that was a space that they could bring their whole selves to. And now in this virtual world, I am talking with LGBTQ youth in their homes, which most people would say that's a place that we should feel most ourselves. And I'm actually witnessing these queer and trans youth navigating their own safety in their own homes.
Yeah, so that's a problem if you can't talk in your own home or can't talk openly in your own home. I imagine that happens. Does that happen frequently?
It is. And so as much as we want to keep everyone safe, this virtual programming has really created some on one hand, additional challenges for youth to connect with us, but also has given us some opportunities for creative ways of working with youth, right? So it may be difficult sometimes for youth to hop on a Zoom call and talk with us and be looking over their shoulder because other folks might be home. They might overhear conversations about them talking about their LGBTQ identity, but we also are able to rely on things like texting and social media to keep in contact with our youth.
Yeah. I was thinking, too, you know, it was not only COVID, but we had civil unrest we experienced in this last year. Has that had an effect as well on the community? Kathy, maybe you could start.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, many, you know, while we were not in office, many of us did participate socially distanced with masks in protest, in standing in support of Black lives, Indigenous lives, other lives, but specifically at Diverse and Resilient, our largest office is in Milwaukee, and the majority of our staff happen to be Black and queer or trans identified. So the civil unrest that happens in this country and has been happening hits very personal and very close to home. So our staff were doing a lot of community care with Black and other Indigenous and other folks who were also queer and experiencing violence while they were also experiencing violence and witnessing this lack of acceptance and lack of respect. So it has been an exhausting year for our staff, and our staff in Milwaukee specifically, our Black and other people of color staff in Milwaukee are exhausted. You know, they were exhausted, but they continue to show up for community. And we've done the same here in the Fox Valley. We also support victims in the Fox Valley who may not be LGBTQ, but are people of color who have had hate violence happen against them. We had a horrendous incident of hate violence happen in Appleton where somebody's home was set on fire. Swastikas were written on their house, and they reached out to us, and we've been working with individuals like that. And it's just it is a time that we've experienced more hate in our program than we've seen in a long time.
Kathy Flores and Reiko Ramos, our guest today. Kathy is director of the Anti-Violence Program. Reiko is the youth advocate, and they've come from the organization Diverse and Resilient. It's great to have them with us to talk about this new programming for LGBTQ youth. And I'll invite you to join in. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us with your questions or maybe your experiences, comments that way as well. I go to ideas@wpr.org if you want to shoot us a note that way. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer today, Tyler Ditter, our engineer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. So happy to have you with us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here as we talk about new LGBTQ programming for youth with our two guests, Kathy Flores and Reiko Ramos, who are in part of the organization Diverse and Resilient. Kathy directs the anti-violence program. Reiko is the youth advocate. So great to have them with us. Again, join in with your own questions, comments, or maybe experiences to share. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Well, I'm hearing here that violence is a grim reality for LGBTQ students, kids, especially in dating. Is that true? I wonder why that would be the case, or how that comes to be the case. Reiko, do you want to start?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I think of teen dating violence, it's a lot of the things that already come to mind when people think of any sort of romantic relationship, and whether that involves emotional or physical harm, and sexual assault and those types of things. But I think with teens, it looks different, right? Because this is a very formative period of life, and youth are in relationships are experiencing a lot of these things for the first time. So it's already hard enough to be a teenager and learning how to be in relationship with others. And then when you add another layer of identity or several identities on top of that, that can be really challenging. And one of the things that is unique to LGBTQ youth is that we're often not given a roadmap or examples of what LGBTQ relationships look like, because we just haven't been exposed to those models of relationships. And really, it does all of us a disservice because that adds to the stigma and shame that a lot of us are made to feel. And so for LGBTQ youth who are experiencing violence in dating relationships, there may be a lot of fear in sharing that with others and seeking help.
Yeah. Kathy, anything to add there?
Yeah, I would just add also that, you know, in health classes, there's often, to echo what Rick was saying, they mentioned the fact that, you know, that we're not taught about these relationships. In health classes, they're starting to cover just intimate partner violence in general, dating violence, but it often doesn't cover other relationships that are not heterosexual. So that's why we partner so well with organizations like Harbor House in Appleton, who does provide that education in schools that is, you know, not biased on gender and is very focused on LGBTQ youth. The other thing is youth who are dating, what the thing that we're seeing, they may be afraid to tell somebody when that relationship turns violent because they may not be out to their parents and their school. And how do you say, oh, by the way, I'm, you know, gay or lesbian or queer or trans, and I also am now being harmed by this person. And sometimes the person might be heterosexual who somebody's responding. We've seen that too. A heterosexual person is dating somebody who's bisexual or queer or trans, and they come out to that person and violence happens in that way as well. And so we just really want to be able to partner with schools and partner with domestic violence shelters. And we've had such great support, but to do that, to get into schools when schools open back up again, for us to be able to go in and have those conversations with youth so that we're providing healthy relationship options. And that's part of what RACO does in our youth group every week with our youth, is really talk about healthy boundaries, healthy relationships. And we're constantly talking about consent, because that is a big area that I don't think a lot of youth get enough information on, but even LGBTQ youth.
Yeah. What are those conversations like, Rico?
So conversations on healthy relationships. So one of the first things I think of is the name of our anti-violence program. So we have the Room to Be Youth, but we also have Room to Be Safe. And I like to think of that as this queer affirmation that even the name of our program is a constant reminder to the people that we work with that you deserve room to be safe and room to be safe everywhere. And so we'll have conversations about what that looks like in your relationships. What does that look like in your family? What does it mean to look, to feel safe, welcome, affirmed, supported, and whole in your schools, in your communities?
Well, these are tough conversations. Is there a lightness to them? I'm trying to figure out how these kinds
joy,
of conversations.
We call it queer joy. There is lots of queer joy, and RACO makes sure to focus on that in our program. Right now, we have a mural being painted that honors the struggle, but also honors our just bright queer joy, because joy is a part of our programming. And I'll let RACO talk about some of the fun things that they do with our youth too.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Go ahead, RACO. So I am, as like many youth workers are, so interested in like making things experiential. So we do have important, often sometimes heavy conversations, but it's really important to me that we do that in a way that is engaging, accessible, and most of all, fun for everyone.
Okay. Well, I tell you what, I'll give the number again. You know, people, I think, I'm wondering, I'm going to check on this, but we get calls on topics. And, you know, this is a hard topic to talk about for a lot of people. I'm telling you, I'll give the number again. It's 800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. You can do it that way, too. But it can be a very hard topic for people to discuss.
It often is a hard topic for people to discuss, and that's part of why we appreciate having this conversation with you, because we want to normalize it. We're part of your community. You know, we're part of your workplaces, part of your places of worship. We're everywhere. And so we just want to normalize conversations like we would normalize talking about your health, Larry, or your, you know, experiences that you might have had if you got COVID or being quarantined from COVID and all of those things. But we also just mostly want to see, you know, we really want to see our youth celebrated and thriving in our communities. And so we encourage conversations, and one of the ways we encourage conversations is we are part of a Fox Cities Book Festival, and the book that we have chosen in the Fox Cities Book Festival is George, and it's about a trans girl named Melissa, and everybody in the Fox Valley is going to be, not everybody obviously, but everybody that wants to be a part of this is going to be reading about this trans girl, and we're going to be having conversations. Diverse and Resilient is doing some presentations, other people are doing presentations, but we're excited. So the Fox Cities actually has a lot more opportunities to talk about LGBTQ youth by this book that was just announced by the Fox Cities Book Festival, supported by Menasha Public Library, Appleton Public Library, and a whole bunch of other sponsors I'll forget, but Diverse and Resilient is right there with them. So yeah, even though it can be difficult, we want to, you know, we don't shy away from difficult conversations at Diverse and Resilient, whether it's LGBTQ related or racism. And trans violence, we talk about, you know, violence that happens, you know, against trans people in our communities, that rate of violence is still extremely high. And so we want to talk about these things, because once we bring things out of the closet, so to speak, and shed light on them, there's more acceptance. And, you know, we all know, you know, well, those of us who are, Larry and I are old enough to remember this anyway, but when Ellen came out in the 90s, she sparked a lot of conversation, right? And that was just, you know, a couple of decades ago. And that's, you know, that it's still sparking conversation when people come out.
Yeah. Well, let's take, I'm sorry, go ahead, Rachel.
Oh, I was going to add that, so sometimes we do sometimes talk about these as hard conversations to have. And one of my observations and personal experience is that LGBTQ people are used to talking about identity and their experiences in community with one another all the time. And that's not something that feels unnatural or as difficult to us. But it is difficult to talk about those things with people who don't understand us, don't love us, don't support us. And so that's the other reason we have these conversations, is to make sure that we're all educated so that it isn't so hard to talk about folks who are not part of our communities and experiences in the same way.
And other people who are not in that community, I mean, haven't had a lot of experience. I mean, as you said earlier, we don't see a lot of things on television, or we just don't experience people in that situation, just don't experience. So that makes it hard to talk about too, just because they don't have the experience they should have had perhaps. Well, Carly and Madison, let's go to you. Hi, Carly. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi there. Good morning. I do have one question, and it seems to be somewhat connected to what you've just been talking about. I'm wondering, specifically as a connection to school outreach, whether there has been or whether there could be any deliberate outreach, queer education and queer understanding to the disability community, different disability communities. And often I know in smaller schools that is the case of one or two students. But often the assumption is by wider society that disability and queer identities do not mix, cannot mix, whether that's the assumption of someone is not mentally competent, where in fact they are, or it's just assumed that people with disabilities don't think about those things, don't have those identities. And that's a significant lack for anyone with a disability trying to figure out their identity. So I'm wondering if there has been any deliberate outreach, or if there could be.
I was just going to shoot it to you anyway, Kathy, so go ahead.
I really want to be on Garden Talk, Larry, so that'll be another day. But anyway, Yeah, I thank you for that question, because I'm a disability advocate as well. And I just want to say that I agree with that, that there's not enough discussion about the intersections of LGBTQ identities. We are having those discussions at Diverse and Resilient, and we work with advocates across the state who are disability advocates as well to make sure that we're, you know, having those conversations about inclusivity. And one of the ways we've been having them lately has been about protests. Protests aren't always the most disability friendly places, because they require marching and things like that. And so everywhere we go, we make sure that that happens. Our own space that we opened up on Wisconsin Avenue, 408 and a half Wisconsin Avenue in Appleton, we made sure to build right away before we opened accessible bathroom. And we have accessible services at our building because of the fact that we know that, you know, LGBTQ people are in all populations, all ethnicities, and yes, disability justice for trans people with disability is a very specific outreach that we have some national resources too. And some folks out of Chicago are doing great work. But yes, I would agree, we need to get more into schools with, you know, doing that type of education and recognizing we're a sex positive organization. And we talk about sex in a way that is healthy so that youth aren't afraid of it, including youth with disability, and to talk about how to safely, you know, be safe when you're having sex and when you're exploring that and all of those options. And that's separate from anti-violence, but it really isn't, because we often see a lot of violence happen within those sexual relationships when consent is not honored for someone with disability.
Yeah, that makes sense. Carly, thank you so much for calling. Let's take another call. Patty in Stoughton, it's your turn. Hi, Patty.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to thank your guests. As often, I kind of listen off and on, so I haven't heard the whole program. But I understand you're out of the Fox Valley. I guess, well, I'm a 69-year-old woman with two lesbian sisters out of nine of us children. Have a good friend who has a gay daughter. I mean, to me, I've been exposed, and I think I understand. But when I hear you talking about, how it's hard to talk about, that's true for me, too, with other people, just because they seem uncomfortable, even if I'm not. And I guess one question is how more can I help, you know, promote or help with this cause or your organization?
Yeah. Wow. Rekha, give you a chance to join in here.
Well, I think for one, you're already doing some of that work, right? By listening and being here with us, and also being able to continue to do some of that work yourself by asking these questions. So I would say, you know, continue having these conversations, and absolutely, it can be uncomfortable. And one of the things that I always challenge allies to do, I challenge our young people to do this as well, is really lean into that discomfort, because that is how we learn and grow together.
Lean into it. That's kind of a good way to put it. Thank you very much, Patty, for calling. Stay listening. Let's go to Ron in Madison. Ron, hello.
Thanks. You remind me of long-distance violence. About 15 years ago, I helped a family move. This was, both dwellings were within ultra-liberal Madison. Now, it was miles from the campus and the Isthmus area, but it was still within the city limits, still within the metropolitan school district. One of the children was in fourth grade that year, and apparently had said some nice things about a first cousin who fits into one of the categories you mentioned, you know, gay or lesbian, mm-hmm. et cetera. And so the fourth grader said something nice about a first cousin who grew up in Massachusetts, not Wisconsin, like more than 1,000 miles away from where the school is still located. But after school, walking home, the fourth grader was stoned by other students in that school. So fourth grade, I guess, is elementary, not even middle school yet, where kids get rowdy. But on the fringe of ultra-liberal Madison, a fourth grader was stoned by fellow students in their own school because they still liked a first cousin 1,000-plus miles away who was lesbian, gay, or transgender, or whatever that cousin's status was.
Ron, thank you for calling. That's a really sad story, Kathy.
Yeah, and it's not, I'm so sorry for that experience, and thank you for sharing that story. And I know it's traumatic to even hear it. But we also, you know, I will recognize that we work with programs in Madison and in progressive communities everywhere where this hate violence happens there all the time. One of the saddest cases I've ever worked on was a dear friend of mine named Drew Nesbitt, who was murdered in 2017 in Madison, Wisconsin. And he moved to Madison to move to a more progressive city, to be somewhere where he'd be more accepted from, because he had a hate violence incident happen in Oshkosh. And he was murdered. And it was a tragic event in my personal life because he was a friend, but also just the recognition of somebody trying to move to a liberal, quote unquote, progressive city, being murdered for who they were. And it was anti-gay hate violence is what happened to him. And we hear from people all the time. We work with Freedom Inc. in Madison, Wisconsin, which is an amazing organization, as well as the Wisconsin Coalition Against Sexual Assault and End Abuse Wisconsin, who are also located in Madison, who really also know that it's not just anti-LGBTQ violence that happens in Madison and just liberal cities like that, but also racism. You know, white privilege is run amok and all of those things. So we recognize that that's not just a rural thing. It's not just, it is also in our progressive cities because it starts in the homes. We're raised with how we think and how we view in our homes. And so that doesn't surprise us. And we're sad to hear it, but we thank you for sharing that story.
Yeah. Thank you, Ron. Jessica in West Bend, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Jessica.
Good morning. Wow. That I just am very grateful for this discussion today. I'm a parent of a queer daughter who describes themselves as they or them. And as a parent in my 50s, this is challenging for me personally because I have unconditional love and yet I have to learn a whole new vocabulary. But I wanted to call in support of programming such as yours because I have walked this path with my daughter in hopes that I would keep her safe as she graduated from high school and then went into the university setting pre-COVID and now post-COVID. I stood by her side, but only to an extent where I explained to her that I cannot speak to her about the sexual piece of it in a manner that is fully comfortable for me because I'm just not knowledgeable. And to take that away from me as a parent, I leaned on these support services such as yours in the university settings and in the school settings to help me have those conversations or at least get her in a space where it was safe. And I cannot tell you how much that has helped us stay together and to help me as a parent feel that she's safe and that I can safely discuss really difficult topics with her and that I can say to her, you know what, this is where you need to go learn from your people and the people that have the knowledge. And I'm here, I walked you here, but thank you so much for what you do. And I really think it is important as family members, friends, to stand by and walk with each other, whether it's about a queer issue or a racial issue or a violence issue, whatever it is, go utilize these support services, not just send them there, but go there yourself. I did, and I learned so much, and I just have so much appreciation. So that's my story of using the services, and thank you.
Jessica, thank you so much for your comments today. Those were wonderful. Kathy, any comment from you?
You know, we're just so grateful for parents like you, Jessica. We really like that. It just makes our day when we get to talk to parents who call us, and this happens often, who call us and say, hey, my kid just came out as trans. They are using they, them pronouns. I don't know what to do. Can you help me? And we happily help. We really love to hear from supportive parents. And so we're just grateful for you. We really are. Thank you for thanking us. But really, we couldn't do this work if parents weren't supporting their youth. And we know that parents supporting youth, and this has been proven, this is evidence-based, that when youth are supported in their homes, they are at a much lower risk of suicide and harm in relationships and everything because they have that support system. So great job with you, Mom.
Great job indeed. Thank you, Jessica, for that, for your comments today, powerful comments. Corinne emailed to ask how the community can be better, can do a better job of supporting LGBTQ individuals, and how can people support this important work?
Well, I'll start just to say, because I am always the money person at DNR up here, so I will also just say we take donations for sure. So financially, if you want to donate to us, you can go to diverseandresilient.org. And we have a donation page. But, you know, we also, once we open up more, we'll be having volunteer opportunities. We don't have a lot right now. But, you know, just being accepting of youth and people in your own community is going to help us out so much more. Going that extra mile to just support youth. And, Reiko, do you have anything to add for that?
I think you got it.
Okay.
And Peter emailed it. Peter emailed to ask about the need for adult role models for students. How common is it for an openly gay person to be hired in the education system as a teacher or a staff member? And that's another issue for sure.
Yeah, go ahead, Rachel.
Absolutely. Like I said earlier, we're not just LGBTQ in like these compartmentalized parts of our lives. So while we talk about making sure that youth are supported in schools, we also absolutely need to make sure that teachers and staff also have that same support in these learning and working environments. And it is often very difficult for teachers to be openly LGBTQ in the classroom. And I am hearing from certain school districts, and I want to give a shout out to the Green Bay Area School District. There are districts like them that are also have growing GSAs or Gay Straight Alliances or Gender Sexuality Alliances also for staff members. So Green Bay East High School is another one of those examples of how they're creating these supportive networks also for educators.
You know, here we are out of time, but just for those who may want to learn more as well and find out, I know people were wondering in other parts of the state where they might be able to get services, but you probably have the ability to provide some help through your own website, I would think, Kathy.
We do, and our warm line is actually statewide, so we can work with anybody across the state. And we have relationships with domestic violence and sexual violence programs in every community. One of the areas that we know is kind of a bit of a stretch for LGBTQ services is in the Wausau and Rice Lake area, but like the Women's Community Center there has been a really big support system of ours. And so we really rely on our partners in those areas, but we get calls from people in Minnesota. We get calls from people all across the state. So I would just say that warm line number is 414-856-LGBT, which is 5428. And you can call that or text us, and we will get you connected to the right service. So we are not just in Milwaukee and Fox Cities. We're talking about the youth service of the Fox Cities, but our program in the anti-violence area goes all across the state. We're funded to do this work all across the state.
And the number again,
414-856-LGBT, which is 5428.
5428 LGBT. All right. On that note, I want to thank you both very much for taking time. You'll probably get a few phone calls now as a result.
You might.
We'll put that up on my page as well, at the Larry Mueller Show.
Thank you.
Page, so people can refer back to that if they didn't get it written down. I didn't the first time, so I'm expecting probably many others didn't. So Kathy and Rico, thank you.
Thank you
so much for having us.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. From the organization Diverse and Resilient, Kathy Flores, who's the director of the Anti-Violence Program, Rico Ramos is the youth advocate. It was great to have them with us. And I expect we'll be talking about this again on the program, certainly. We're going to switch gears a bit with you now and talk about a Wisconsin program that's helping schools use solar power. That's coming up next on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.